No! The brother of the Brothers Movie Factory does not woohoo. He doesn't whistle. He just says his goddamn name! And welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. Don't you... No!
Don't you whistle at me.
Don't you whistle. The brother of the Brothers Movie Factory does not whistle.
Does he woo-hoo? Woo-hoo,
woo-hoo. No! The brother of the Brothers Movie Factory does not woohoo. He doesn't whistle. He just says his goddamn name.
I'm sorry. I was being silly. Silly rabbit. Tricks are for
kids. Gotti. With me, as always, brother of Brothers Movie Factory, Bill himself. In-house.
Gonna want to kill Gus.
Gonna have to kill Gus. We brought in Bill.
Oh, Bill.
But yes, with me, as always, the brother of Brothers Movie Factory, Gus. So before we get into the fun, before we get into the movie, why don't we just real briefly talk about what this show is about? So on the Brothers Movie Factory, every week, what we do is we take a film from the past. We then watch that film and we take to the pod to discuss what makes that movie great, what makes it bad, what are the ups and the downs of that film. We then submit that movie to the factory. That is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star in it? Etc., etc. It's for fun. It's an imaginative moment. And then we wrap up the show with maybe a couple questions here and there. Sound good?
Good.
Sounds good, Cole. And I think this podcast is important, too.
It's important.
Booker T, everyone. But, yes, taking to the pod this week, there's a certain movie coming out tomorrow, correct? Thursday, what would it tomorrow
the
be?
The 25th, yeah.
25th of July.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin yes. Tarantino's a ninth film.
Am I wrong to, like, through all the commercials and stuff, I have no clue what that movie's about? Like, I watched the commercials several times, and I'm like, ah!
Like, I think it's one of those movies that there's a lot going on.
Yeah, they're like, I thought the whole movie leading into it, like before a first trailer even dropped, I thought the whole movie was going to be about like, the Manson murders. And, like, that's what it was about.
I think it's just part of it.
But then, like, I see fucking Bruce Lee, and yeah. Like, I'm like, what's going on?
You're telling me there's going to be more Bruce Lee movies?
Yes.
There could be, anyway?
Yes.
Yes. From a certain point of view, there yeah. could be.
Yeah, but everyone's like really excited about it, as they should be, because Quentin Tarantino, I don't think has really ever missed in his, what, this is his ninth film?
Ninth.
And he wants to do 10, correct? That was his original
plan. That's what he's been saying.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Yeah, he'll probably change his mind.
Yeah. But everyone's really seems very excited about the film, as they should be. I just can't say that I even, for the life of me, know what's going on.
I didn't know what it was about up until yesterday. I watched an interview between him, Quentin Tarantino, and Jimmy Kimmel. And he explained the plot of it on there.
Does it make more sense? Does it seem like, or is it going to be like classic Tarantino where there's going to be some time hops and skipping between things? It's going to start with the end and end with the beginning and close up with the middle. That made no sense because that's Tarantino.
It's going to start with the sequel.
Yes. He should do that. I think he could do that. He'd like, let's go backwards. Let's do a trilogy, but start with the end.
Yeah.
Work our way back.
So I guess it's about a TV actor who is like big megastar TV-wise. But when his show got canceled and it came time for him to transition into movies, he never really got to that like megastar level. And just over the years, his limelight dwindled until he was playing like villain roles and bit parts, and now he's like midlife crisis mode and just wants a little taste of the glory again.
Birdman.
And something like that, and him, Leo, being the lead, and his stunt double, played by Brad Pitt, I don't know, somehow get involved with their neighbor, who is Sharon Tate.
Yeah, and she gets murdered by.
Yeah, and she's part of the Manson cult and whatnot.
I don't think she was part of the cult. She was like their first victim, like one of their high-profile victims.
Got it.
at least that's what I think I got from Ghost Adventures when they explored her house.
So, yeah, Tarantino movies are kind of seen as an event. That's why I believe in the marketing. You don't really need to know what it's about because you just – see his name, you see the marquee names and the stars, and you're selling tickets.
He's just he's so interesting the way his movies are, because like I feel like in most like most people watch these films and be like, these movies, like there's a lot of blutz and gore, like over
blutz?
The top blutz blood and gore. I was gonna say guts and blood
guts and
yeah,
blutz.
Yeah, and blutz, mix it together. But there's a lot of blood, guts, gore. Swearing, profanity. It almost, the movies are like almost all unanimously like designed to make you uncomfortable in a lot of different ways. But for whatever reason, it's like a the way the dialogue is, where to sometimes his dialogue seems completely and utterly pointless, but that's like, it's like mesmerizing. Like, especially you think of like Pulp Fiction when they're just talking about cheeseburgers. And like cheeseburgers in France and shit like that,
like, or like Reservoir Dogs, where they're talking about tipping.
Yeah, it's all character building. It makes it really like them, the characters more real. But also it's just the way that he paces his dialogue is so phenomenal that you almost like all the different things go right over your head. Like right in The Hateful Eight, when like he's telling the story about how he made the general's son walk out in the cold and then suck his dick for warmth. It's like Jesus,
suck his dingus,
yeah, his dingus. Full blood, so it's warm. Like that's like most people would be like, yeah, but
that's
it's
too far.
The movie is phenomenal, 8 for 8.
Got you seeing pictures, ain't?
But yeah, that's like he's known for his dialogue, but also his shots. Like, he takes some crazy shots or does some like artsy stuff with his shots. That's like really, really good. Like yeah. I noticed a couple tonight. Guess we should say, tonight we watched Kill Bill.
Kill
and there was
Bell.
A couple times tonight that I was watching this movie, I'm like, that was really cool. Like, the switch to the black and white, and then, like, how they clipped off of it. Well, if she, like, blinked and it just went back to normal. Like, that's really neat. But, yeah, that's, like, what he's known for is the dialogue. Like, I was even talking to our brother today, our other brother. And he was like, yeah, no one does dialogue like Tarantino, and I would agree.
Yeah. And he's also the master of the homage. Like he embodies films that inspired him, that like sparked, what's the word? Just sparked creativity in him, and inspiration. That's the word I was looking for. And he's able to pay homage to them in his own unique way. So, for example, in Kill Bill, there's a scene where the bride kind of wakes up, or no, she's still comatose in the hospital bed, and what's her name, Ellie Driver comes in as the nurse with a eye patch.
Yeah.
And she's obviously seen as a villain, and they do that side by side shot, so like one
yeah,
half of
that,
the screen's
like,
her
great shot.
Her in the hospital bed, the bride in the hospital bed, and the other is her, the villain, Ellie Driver, coming to kill her, and that villainous music starts to rise. That was paying homage to like a Brian De Palma film.
Okay, but even that's the point too. Like that moment is a great shot. That was like, that was really cool. Was she goes to slide? Like there's the double shots. There's the shot of her in the bed, the hospital bed, and the nurse coming, and the nurse slides the sliding door open, and it literally like the sliding door opening closes the other panel with her in the comatose state. Like that's so cool. It's like
good
such a good
yeah.
It's great filmmaking.
Directing.
Even I read that some like the more like the anime portions of this based on he was a big fan of Ghost in the Shell.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I read in my research. A big fan of Ghost in the Shell. I was watching this movie, and the more I watched it, the more I was like, this is like an anime. Like this movie feels just
live,
like an anime, like a live action anime, because there's some ridiculous parts, especially at the end.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this is like. And there even is. There's like a 10 to 15 minute midsection that is an anime. And it's produced wonderfully by IG Productions, who did a Ghost in the Shell TV show.
Okay.
They co-produce Attack on Titan.
Do they?
Yeah. They did a couple other shows. They did all of Attack on Titan Jr.
Sweet.
They did Eden of the East, if you've ever heard of that show.
Yeah.
They did Psychopaths, which is kind of big right now.
It's popular. A lot of stuff.
Yeah, they've done a ton of great shows. And I've noticed, too, they've if you ever seen the video games, they're like Tales of Symphonia. Mm-hmm, Tales of, they did all the animations for like those games and the animes of them. So they've done a lot of great shows. They've done movies. They've done One Piece movies here and there. They've done all sorts of big ones. They've done Batman movies, like anime movies. So they're a really talented studio. So to have them come in and do like the anime, which that was one of my favorite parts of the movie, was the animation sequence.
I haven't seen this movie in over 10 years.
Same.
While we were watching it, I was thinking, I'm like, that... I told you the last time I thought I watched, and I was really thinking, I'm like, it was the last time I watched this movie. It was at our grandmother's house, and I was, long story, but I was living with her at the time. So this had to have been 2006 or 7.
I was thinking that I watched this movie with mother.
It wasn't 2006.
And now, as I watched it tonight, I'm like, did I really watch this when I was in high school with mother? I'm like, name's Buck, and I'm here to fuck. I'm like, I don't think I watched this with mom.
What? You didn't watch the old pussy whacking with mother?
I know I watched all the Matrix movies, and there's an orgy scene in the second one. Yeah. So.
I even watched Gone Girl recently with mother. I'm 28 years old, and I was
sorry. now let's watch Black Swan.
Yeah. What's next? I hadn't seen this movie in such a long time. I forgot that anime scene even existed to the point where I wasn't even like, oh, I forgot about this scene. It was... I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. Well, it was so the cool. Starting menu. The start, like the DVD or the Blu-ray, menu was like all anime. And I was like, it's an anime. And then it was.
I saw those clips. I'm like, is this based on a manga or something? I'm like, no, it's the original story, Kill Bill is. And that scene shoot. If the scene comes up out of nowhere, it's to explain the origin of one of the villains.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's even the thing, like, they were able to do some really cool stuff because anime has its own style. We've talked about it on the podcast here before with our Whisper of the Heart episode back for Valentine's Day. You could check it out. Anime has its own like specific style. And that's what I'm saying. Like some of these like live action shots reminded me of anime, especially that final battle. I was like, this is like just anime.
Yeah.
That's what it feels
blood
like. Anime and or like it reminded me of The Protector or like Umbach the Thai Warrior. Like those moments where you just fighting off drones of people.
Fun fact, though, those movies came out after Kill Bill. You silly bitch.
Whoops. This film, Kill Bill, do you happen to know, like, how was it received when it first came out?
I mean...
This is fourth film.
Yeah. It was received very positively other than, you know, some snooty poos not liking the violence.
Too much blood.
Yeah, the
pussy wagon.
the over exaggerated violence and explicits, you know, people shouting out in arms like this isn't necessary. But there's an audience for that stuff.
Well, like people get their heads cut off and they're like spewing blood and I'm like, that is not how physics works.
That's okay. That near in the final battle at the Blue Tavern or something. That French lady who's with the villain gets her arm cut off.
Yeah.
Spraying blood, and she's still alive by the end of it. She'd be at least passed out.
Yeah.
If not
it's
dead.
Like, you don't leave. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure she's lost a lot of blood. Yeah. I'm very badly injured.
Her wound is starting to smell like almonds, which is not good.
She pretty screwed up. Yeah. I thought that too, though. I was like, are you still living?
Just a flesh wound?
She's like, except you, Sophia. You stay. I'm like, you should just run. Run, bitch!
She would have been dead for a long time.
I don't think so. I think she's good.
Yeah, she in the sequel.
'Tis but a flesh wound.
Yeah. I just made that joke,
I
you
know.
Silly
I didn't
bitch.
Know if you knew what you made a joke of. What's it from? What's it from? Do you know?
Yeah, it's Monty Python, the Holy Grail.
Wrong. It's from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, bitch.
I forgot the comma and the bitch. that's what...
Samples?
I'm wearing sandals, a kimono, and a katana. I'm holding one.
Yes.
It's an accessory.
Nah.
It's like a watch.
Yes. It's like she took it on that plane, and I was like, it's her carry-on. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. They're like, oh, sure, go ahead.
Like, Air Japan, come on board.
Welcome. That's the goal for this podcast. How many Kung Pao references can we make?
How many references can we make without referencing Kill Bill?
That's right. Bradley. It was received very well, and mostly for its unique style, in that it incorporates many. We already mentioned like homages to like just different kinds of shooting techniques, anime. But there's homages to like exploitation films and old samurai films, and that was part of the filmmaking. Quentin Tarantino is notorious for doing this, but when he has a film he wants to make with a certain style, and with certain characters, the actors portraying the characters in his films, he'll have them basically do homework, in a sense. Have them watch certain films. Like, I want you to watch this, this, and this, and you kind of get a good vibe for your character.
As it should be.
Yeah, so one of the films Quentin Tarantino had Uma Thurman watch was Lady Snowblade or something. I gotta look that up.
Lady Snowblade.
It's something like that.
Lady Deathstrike.
If you look it up, too, it's very, what am I saying? It's very, there's a scene in this film that is very similar to Lady Snowblood. Lady Snowblood,
it's
not Blade.
It's the finale.
The finale.
In the snow?
Yeah. The finale is very reminiscent to this film, The Lady Snowblood. The main character in Lady Snowblood is very similar to our... How do you say her name? Onishi?
Oren
Ishii. Yeah. I guess the main villain of this
volume. Yeah, this is weird.
I mean, she wasn't the main villain,
I
guess.
Well, what's weird about it, yeah, is
they're all
she's
equal
the
in
first
a sense.
One. She's the first one she kills on her kill list. But
not
the second
in sequence,
one in terms of sequence of the filmmaking, because like I said, Quentin Tarantino loves his time jumps.
It's just it's a different than just a straight linear storytelling, because it causes the viewer's brain and mind to think in a different way, and it's just more entertaining, or a different way of entertaining.
Kind of like a puzzle.
Yeah, it causes you to think. It's
where's
more.
Where's this happening?
Yeah, and if the film's done right, you should be able to follow along, too.
Well, I was going to say, Pulp Fiction has it. I don't know about Jackie Brown. Reservoir Dogs has it, because I've never seen Jackie Brown. But Reservoir Dogs has it. Kill Bill has it.
You ain't seen Jackie Brown?
No, I think it's the only Tarantino film I haven't seen.
Oh, yeah.
Well, pretty sure.
You should. I got two copies of it. You can
borrow
one.
I was going to say, I know we have it on DVD. I know it happens in Kill Bill, both Kill Bill movies. Does it happen in Hateful Eight? Not really. It doesn't jump around as much.
Oh,
or not Hateful Eight. I'm sorry.
Django.
Django. His other Western.
Just not in this way. Yeah. There's some flashback scenes, but
yeah,
that's
not in the same.
That's normal.
Same format. Yeah. But it's just he always kind of like it's almost like a puzzle. He like pieces his films together, and this one had that where it was like it started. You saw that Oren was already dead. She crosses off the second person on her kill list in, like, the first 20 minutes.
Right.
So you're like, oh, so the person she's going after, she's obviously going to kill. But at the same time, that whole ending sequence, you're, like, on edge. Like, she's not going to win this. She's getting her dick kicked in. You're like, I know you win, but I don't believe it.
Yeah. I forgot. I actually did forget that. She does make it through that fight.
It's like in Hateful Eight when it says, like, also Channing Tatum. And then Channing Tatum pops up, like, 2.5 hours in the movie, and you're like, oh, Channing Tatum's in this. He's, like, in the opening credits.
Didn't know Dan Aykroyd was in this picture.
Yeah. Man, gets brain blown out.
Hey there, little troublemaker.
He was giving up.
That's not that line anyway.
I think it was Joe Gage.
You big dummy. That's the line he says. Troublemakers in Django.
Took all the stupid with you. He blows his head off.
Cock shooter.
Yeah.
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 Dingus shooter.
Dingus shooter.
So this has been a long time since you've seen old Kill Bill here.
Kill Bill.
And how'd she treat you? How'd you enjoy her?
I was, you know, I've been telling you I'm really excited for a video game to come out, Fire Emblem Three Houses for the Switch. Sponsor us, Nintendo and Intelligent Systems. But I'm really excited for a game to come out. And when I get excited about things, I become slightly obsessive. Mm. And so, like, I try to fill my time with things related to that, but I didn't want to play any Fire Emblem games because then I'd get involved in those, and then when the game came out, so I've been biding my time. I need to find something to fill this void as I wait for this game to come out. So I've thought about playing different games. I started playing Banjo-Kazooie. I tried to watch different TV shows. I've been filling that void with YouTube. I'll tell you, this Kill Bill is the first thing I've watched, and I've tried to watch animes too that get caught back up, and I can't. Kill Bill was the first thing I've watched in the last week that I was that was good, and I really want to watch the next one.
It kind of occupied your
yeah,
brain space.
It was like I had something, I was I really want to see Kill Bill 2 now. Almost to the point you were let's watch the next one. I'm put it in!
Pick him up!
It was phenomenal. The action, the pacing. Right to the point where I was this is, you even said, it's a short Tarantino film, it's an hour and 51 minutes, which isn't necessarily a short movie, it's still pretty, just dick hair shy of, dick hair shy, keep it nice and clean.
Dick
hair shy of being long, yep. It's still a decent long picture, but I didn't think it was that, it didn't feel slow. I thought it flew. It's constant action and or really compelling storytelling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really compelling dialogue or just camera work or just different things for your eyes to look at. You don't even realize, your eyes and your brain are going all over the place in this masterful fashion.
Well, yeah. So, Kill Bill, obviously, I'll just give the people that you might not know the summary you gave me before I watched the film, because I don't even remember what this movie's about. You said, I believe this is what you said, it's about a bride who is betrayed by her former, she used to be an assassin, she's betrayed by her former group of assassins, and thought to be killed on her wedding day. And Bill, who's the leader of this group, comes in and shoots her in the head. And when she wakes up from her coma 4 years later, she has a metal plate in her head, and her baby, she was pregnant, is gone. So she just assumes that her baby was killed, and she seeks revenge. So that's basically what the point of the film is. She's going to go and kill Bill, believe it or not.
Kill Bill.
In this film, you see her take out two of those people, and in spectacular fashion. But in that final bit, where she takes out the first little slew of people, takes out old Gogo. Takes out old Gogo, which was a really cool fight with her using the ball and chain, going at her and everything. But kills Gogo, and then the hordes of her Yakuza come in, and she's just killing them all. I thought it was neat that, she's doing that, and halfway through that fight, she's killing all these hordes of people. Halfway through that fight, it switches to black and white. And all of a sudden, it's black and white. And it adds this whole different vibe to the fighting. And it's, more aesthetic and artistic. And then it switches back to regular. And there's a little fighting in the light. And then the lights get shut off. And there's, almost shadow boxing. You can only see the silhouettes of people fighting. And it's a different... It's almost like he was we can't just have 20 minutes of straight fighting and that is it. We need to add something else into it to make it not get boring. You're not I'm seeing the same thing again and again and again. Instead, you're getting maybe similar shots, but in a different style now. They're light, and then they're black and white, then they're back to light, then they're silhouetted. It's and then the final fight in the snow outside of this
very
area.
Scenic and yeah. Cinematic.
So it's I took it as it was a way of, again, pacing the film, but also keeping it fresh throughout, mm-hmm. and you're not this is just a fuck fest.
Why do you think they went to black and white like that? Or the silhouette.
My first thought was like they're trying to keep it from being X-rated. Like they're keeping some of the blood out of it, because I was like, that looks like milk now. I like when films go to black and white. I think it's really an effective tool when used properly, and then you get the color. You see that in things like Sin City and like Schindler's List that use all black and white, or even Wizard of Oz. Effective use of black and white to
effective
color.
Effective use of black and white.
But I thought that this, with the black and white, almost, I don't know, like if I was thinking of it like an artistic way, I would say like she was seeing black and white. She was just going. She was like just killing people.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it.
That's probably the artistic way to look at it.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for the story and her character to this point.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was also part of the real reason why it was used. Another real reason it was used is just another homage to films he used to watch when he was younger. Samurai films, to avoid a severe R rating or an X rating or, you know, that kind of thing. They would just cut to black and white when it became violent scenes in order to keep the rating down.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. So in samurai films of the past, a lot of times when there was horde fights like this, where like the samurai and or the swordsman was taking on a bunch of people, and this would happen in Japanese shows as well, plays, stage plays. If they were taking on hordes of people, they would choreograph it in a way that he was only ever taking on one person at a time. And now this is something that's similar actually used in video games, like one of your favorite video games, Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time. I don't know if you knew this, but if you're facing multiple hordes of enemies, only one attacks you at a time. Did you know that? Like, you never get attacked by more than one.
Yeah.
That was something that they designed, developers put into Ocarina of Time, because in those movies, they were watching them for inspiration for combat. They saw that that was the way they would choreograph it and make it look like you could take on more enemies, even though you're only facing one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So they added that into the game, where only one enemy would attack you at a time. So you could focus on one. Same with samurai movies and or like stage plays in Japan. But this film does not do that. She's like taking out multiples. Like she's just
with a swing of a sword, three people.
Yeah, taking out multiple people, doing some crazy stuff. Like, that's what I was saying. This is like an anime embodied. Like, the scene where, like, she gets up on the upper balcony, and the last, like, real big henchman, like, literally, like, jumps and flies up. He's like, ah!
He does. He's like, yeah.
He just kind of, like, flies up in the air. Like, okay.
Makes sense.
Yeah. He gets both his legs chopped off, and he dies.
That's real nice.
Stole Sophie over there. She's still alive.
She's still alive, man.
Yeah. How? Keeping her alive.
Did you say how?
Yeah. Sophie.
Oh, how?
How? Moving castle. Talking about anime.
Gotcha.
And blood.
Makes all the sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Another thing I really liked of this film is the music choices. A lot of it is soundtrack music.
Like this.
When you hear that, do you think of Date Movie?
I've never seen Date Movie.
Yeah, I've never saw that?
Yeah.
That's the best.
Let me say that again. I've never seen Date Movie. Sometimes I do that. I'm like, I never seen it. I'm like, ooh.
Ain't seen it.
Never
None.
Done it.
For the best. That famous whistle we looked up tonight is from a movie called Twisted Nerve. And probably most famously from this movie would be the 5678s doing their woo-hoo.
Yeah. But even that, like that, but to go back to that whistle, like both roommate Matt and I were like, we've heard this before. And he was like, it's in a horror movie, isn't it? And he was trying to think, I was trying to think, and then you found it. It was an American Horror Story, first season. Tate, played by Evan Peters, whistles it when he's going about his dirty deeds.
Dirt cheap.
Yeah, but that popped into my head because I'm like, I know that creepy whistle from somewhere.
That 5678 song, the woohoo. Cool story with that. Quentin.
Were they the actual band?
Yeah, that was actually them. That band was in this film as well, playing their song. Quentin Tarantino was scouting locations in Japan where they shot some of the movie. And it was like he was on his way to the airport, but he wanted to stop at this like kind of thrift store looking for clothes, stuff like that. He wanted to find like a cool shirt, a cool jacket, as he described it. And as he was in there, he heard that song playing inside the store. And he went up to the cashier and he was asking, like, who's this band? What's the song? And the cashier handed him the CD because they were playing on a CD player. And he wanted to buy the CD. He's like, how much for the CD? He's like, oh, I can't sell it. He's like, well, I want to buy it. And he's like, the guy's like, you can go a couple stores down to the record store. I'm sure they sell it there. He's like, nah, if I leave here, I probably won't. I got to go to the airport. I'll forget about it. I want to buy this one. He's like, how about I pay you even more money for this one so you can go buy another one later? And they called the manager, and the manager's like, yeah, that's fine. So because of his persistence, he got this CD at a thrift store they paid overpaid for.
I do not want it.
And
it's free, sir. I will pay you more money now for it.
Get out. Take it and leave. No. $100.
I'll give you $1,000 for this. And we'll let you have it. We'll let you have the CD for $1,000. But you also have to take this copy of What Dreams May Come. Sorry. I do not want it.
What Dreams May Come. Jesus. But yeah, that's how the 5678's got into this Kill Bill movie, and it's a pretty memorable jam. It's even used in the Yahoo commercials.
Yeah. That's why I thought, I was like, this feels dangerous. But yeah, no, this movie, I can't rave about that animation scene enough, because like all that animation, especially like that fighting with the dad, and he's like taking on like the military dad. But was that, real quick, was that supposed to be Bill the swordsman?
I don't know.
Well, what I took from it was,
never made that connection.
Well, he had the same rings.
Oh, did he?
Yes. Well, that's then, I think that's why roommate Matt was like, is that Bill?
I thought he meant the Yakuza leader.
No. The swordsman that kills the dad. He had the same rings, and his sword had the skull on it, which was the face. It was the skull thing, or the symbol that the sword maker would use. And she says that a student of yours, I think you probably thought it was Eren, but it was Bill. Bill was the student.
Oh, Bill.
That's why he writes Bill.
Gotcha.
I think. Anyways, that's what I pieced together. Maybe the second one. Maybe in the sequel. It explains, but
it's been so long since I've seen the sequel.
Yeah,
too.
Same.
It's been equal amount of time for me. I remember back then, I would say like the second one more.
Yeah,
it's more character story driven. Although this one's chock full of that too.
The second one has Joe Cage. Gotta close the door.
It's
two butt. Nails. Thank two you. Nails.
How many Hateful Eight references can we make?
Gah!
The best one yet. I was about to quote many other lines in that movie, but I realized I can't.
Yeah, like about to quote it, and then you realized there's a lot of stuff you can't say.
That's it. So yeah, this was refreshing for me. I've been in a kung fu martial art movie kind of mood. I haven't indulged in it yet. I just bought a fuck ton. I just bought like seven of them. I haven't watched any of them. But this kind of scratched the itch a bit. It's masterfully done. It's exceptional filmmaking for sure.
Yeah.
And storytelling. Very entertaining for its audience. This movie's not for everybody.
Huh.
But it is a very good revenge film.
I thought you were about to be like, it's not for everyone, but it is.
But if it isn't, then you're wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely one of my favorites of the Tarantinos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think. The ones in recent memory, I got Pulp Fiction.
As your fave?
No. Pulp Fiction's in there. Is like, I haven't seen it in probably 8 years.
Oh, really?
So it's been a long time, so I need to rewatch that. But every time I go to rewatch it, I'm like, I don't have almost 3 hours. And it's one of those films that you probably kind of need to sit, because there's so many time jumps and you gotta kind of keep with it. Hateful Eight's probably my favorite. I love Django. However, I'm in the same camp where I haven't really seen it much since it came out. Reservoir Dogs is phenomenal, I think. I just recently rewatched that twice. And it's so good. Like, the story is so good, and the characters are so good.
Inglourious Bastards.
I'm a cop!
Okay.
I haven't seen Inglourious Bastards the whole way through. Came at
We're
going to
stop recording. I'm going to beat the fuck out of you, and then we'll record. Get out. You'll have seen it by then.
Where's the Jew Bear at?
Yeah.
From that movie.
I'm going to go get my roommate. He's going to get a bat, and he's going to beat you to death with it.
You know, it was originally supposed to be Adam Sandler?
Yeah.
But it was, yeah. No, I forget why.
Do you like America?
It was probably when I was young and dumb and that first scene happened. I'm like, I don't want to read subtitles. And then I've like went on to watch like throughout high school when I got into my like I'll watch anything phase. I was watching like German films and French films and all these different foreign films.
Inglourious Bastards is both of those things.
Yes.
Monsieur Le Petit.
No. Yes. No, yeah, I haven't really seen Inglourious Bastards the whole way through.
Well, you're fucked.
Buongiorno.
Yeah.
I think Hateful Eight, out of the ones that I can remember and have seen, I would say is my favorite. But Kill Bill is really fucking good.
Yeah. Concur.
Well, it's better. It is better.
If you're asking me to do the same, I'm there with you. Hateful Eight's probably my favorite. Django's real close right behind there, and Glorious Bastards after that, and then probably I was gonna say Kill Bill 2, but it's not fresh enough anymore now that I've seen the first one. But the Kill Bills, Reservoir Dogs, and then I'm insane, but I Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown are my bottom tiers. I mean, they're all great films, so it's not like it's a bad film or anything. It's just if you're asking me to rank them, that's where I put it.
Say Pulp Fiction's at the bottom, motherfucker. Say it again.
It's at the bottom.
That's what I sent to Father for his birthday this year. I sent Jules picking up a gun, but it was a birthday cake. It said, "Happy birthday, motherfucker."
That was the problem with this movie. Samuel Jackson wasn't in it.
If Samuel Jackson was to be casted in this film, who would he play?
He'd be Bill.
He'd be Bill. Samuel Jackson is Bill. Then you'd know it was him, though. Like, they try to keep him, like, anonymous. You'd know.
He would play...
He'd walk up behind Sophie at the end and be like, "Tell me, what's in your wallet?"
He would play... one of the Deadly Viper assassins, Copperhead, would play her daughter.
Yes.
Nikki.
Yes. What if Jeff Goldblum was Bill?
He would be Buck.
Yes.
I'm Buck, and
what if he was the guy that just paid Buck? What if he was the guy that paid Bucks? Because all that guy does is laugh and be like, he'd be pointing.
Yes.
And he starts getting bit and be like, excuse me.
excuse me.
How are we getting into Jeff Goldblum and Kill Bill?
Exactly. There it is.
Well, chaos theory. Now that... Jeff that's Goldblum, chaos. Kill Bill, that's chaos. But let's go ahead and take this movie to the factory. So in this portion of the show, what we do is we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would be like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? For today's film, however, because the soundtrack isn't necessarily like, there's like, what, two original pieces of music? And most of it, it's too iconic with the film. We're not going to do a composer. It's actually a smaller factory than normal because there really aren't that many... for lack of a better term, memorable, like, characters for, like, starring big roles.
Yeah. I mean, they're memorable characters.
Yes. Like, Go-Go is memorable, but, like, why recast her? She's really good in her role. We're going to do director. We're going to do the bride, the main character, who doesn't have a name. That's another thing we didn't touch on. Like, every time they would, like, say her name, it was just a really loud, obnoxious beep over the name. It'd be like, beep!
Do you want to know her name?
What is her name? The Bride. Is that really her name? Mm-hmm. They reveal it in the next one?
I think so.
Okay. Huh? All right. And then O-Ren, Kylo Ren's sister.
You also see her name, the bride's name, in the first movie. If you look close enough, when she flies to different places on her ticket that they stamp, it zooms in, so you have to really catch it. But it says somewhere. I didn't see it. I looked for it, but I couldn't see it.
There it is. But yes, so we're going to do director, the bride, and O-Ren. So, and then I believe Gus wants to cast his Bill.
Oh, Bill.
He says he has a voice. Is it like Bill Murray?
That'd be good.
But yes, so director of this
film. It's Bill Nunn.
Kill Bill Volume 1.
Do you know who Bill Nunn is?
No.
He's in Spider-Man. I'm telling you, he's not a menace.
Yeah, the guy with
he's in Sister Act too, or Sister Act.
But he's the guy with Jameson.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
All right. That's not my Bill.
Okay, I was gonna say.
I don't even know if he's alive.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't tell Harry.
Oh, attack her hot.
So who do you got? This is another tough one. Like,
well, how do you recast Tarantino?
Yeah,
we just got done saying how no one is like Tarantino. Is there anyone even out there that pushes the boundaries like Tarantino?
Not American filmmakers.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we haven't had anyone. And a lot of times, I don't even know if it's possible to make some of the movies he makes. Like, nowadays, he's built up this credibility and this rapport that, like, it comes out. And he can make a movie like Hateful Eight, and no one's losing their minds because they're like, it's just Tarantino. It's a Tarantino film. But if someone new came out, they'd be like, fuck this guy. Who does he think he is? Like, it'd be completely different.
Right.
So I was thinking that. I'm like, who could you possibly get to replace this megastar of a director? And I was trying to think of possibly going with a first-time director of someone that had maybe worked on, maybe not first-time director, but someone that had maybe been in the movies with him, like maybe done, like never directed. I don't know if she's ever directed, but maybe getting like Uma Thurman to literally direct the film.
Wow.
Has she ever directed anything? I wonder. Why don't you look that up?
Keep talking, I'll look.
But I was thinking of that, like, as I was watching the movie tonight, I'm like, what if you took someone who's worked with him on multiple projects, Kill Bill 1, Kill Bill 2, reportedly talking about Kill Bill 3 with him still to this day, but also in Pulp Fiction, was that one of her first big roles, Pulp Fiction?
She's been acting for a
regardless,
long time.
Regardless, yeah. So I thought, what about putting like someone who's worked with him, knows him, has a working relationship with him? She's never directed anything, and give her a shot behind the directing table. I don't know, be an experiment. It was just a thought of mine as I was watching the film. I'm like, because I even crossed my mind. I'm like, what about Bruce Willis? But I'm like, Bruce Willis doesn't give a shit about anything anymore. And I was like, Samuel L. Jackson, but I don't know about that either. I was like, who better to tie to a Kill Bill movie if it was made today than the main character herself.
That'd be interesting, especially because the creation of this movie was made between Quentin Tarantino and Uma Thurman. It started as early as Pulp Fiction. While they were on set, Quentin had an idea for a movie, and they started batting ideas back and forth for a while. And that was going to be his next film, but things happened. Things kind of went their own way. His next film ended up being Jackie Brown. So they didn't end up even tackling Kill Bill for like 7 years after Pulp Fiction came out. And Uma Thurman came back to Quentin Tarantino with ideas. And Quentin was working on a war epic, which I'm sure turned into Inglourious Basterds eventually. He dusted off his Kill Bill script that he was working on. He's like, you know, there's some good stuff here. And he just got back to working on it. So it was just a love child. Not to be dirty about it, but a love child of the heart between Quentin Tarantino and Uma Thurman. So, yeah.
Ah.
But my director I'm choosing.
I was like, I don't think he said his director yet.
That was just my piece. I did pick a director who's known for stylized film, stylized action, unique camera work, and makes entertaining, solid movies. We've mentioned him on the pod before. We've even factored him in a couple things. But it's kind of the obvious choice, if you ask me, and that would be Edgar Wright. He's made Shaun of the Dead. Hot Fuzz, which is one of the greatest action movies ever made, and at World's End, or The World's End, which is all three of those are
well, and he's done
wonderful.
Recently, like Baby Driver.
And yeah,
stuff,
and he did Baby Driver recently. He did Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which are all awesome, excellent genre action movies. And I always look forward to whatever he does next because I know I'll be entertained and in for a good ride. So having him tackle something like this would be a big undertaking. Doing like a samurai exploitation film, revenge, epic, you know. But with his style and action or his take on action, I'm sure he can nail it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm up for whichever. So I will flip you for that, John. Are you for it? Heads,
for it.
Uma Thurman, tails, Edgar Wright. Heads, Uma Thurman. We'll go with the Uma Thurman experiment.
Yeah, right.
It's a big experiment, but who, I don't, we've never done that before, I don't think.
Hey, she's remaking it. It's like, who closer?
Yeah, I guess.
To the source material.
All right, next we would go with our O-Ren. How's that sound? We'll start with O-Ren.
Who you got for that?
So for my O-Ren, I actually had two picks in mind. The first pick that came to mind as I was thinking to play this role of she's Japanese, Chinese, and American, right? Those are like, that's the character plot, and she becomes... she's like one of the world's greatest assassins, and she becomes the leader of like the Yakuza of all of Japan. So at first I was like, who's a big actress right now in Hollywood? Kind of polarizing in a sense, but not for the right reasons. And I first went with Kelly Marie Tran, who plays, Rose in Last Jedi. I like all Star Wars. I don't mind Rose, but at the same time, like as I watched Last Jedi, I'm like, she's kind of a pointless character. She didn't deserve all the flack she got for it. It wasn't her fault. She's good in it. She plays her part well. But then secondly, I went with a Constance Wu. I don't know if you've ever heard of Constance Wu. Both Kelly Marie Tran and Constance Wu were both in that Crazy Rich Asians, which
okay.
is a very popular
movie. I know
movie.
Who you're talking about now.
I believe Constance Wu is in a new film on Netflix called Dark Obsession. It just came out. She did voice acting in things like the Lego Ninjago movie and among other things. She did a lot of TV shows. And then Constance Wu, I believe she was in something in Disney at one point. People probably yelling at the screen, but yes, Constance Wu.
Okay. I'm going with, her name is Lu Yifei, also known as Crystal Liu. She was in a martial arts film called Forbidden Kingdom, which was about a young girl who was also on a revenge path to to take out the killers who murdered her her family, kind of deal. And she's going to be the star in the upcoming Disney movie Mulan. And now that trailer for the new Mulan has got me frowning because I'm like, what? This isn't my Mulan. It's strange. It's different.
I was watching. I'm like, that doesn't make much sense.
It doesn't even seem like it's in the shadow of what the original Mulan movie was about. But what did catch my eye was this is a badass female lead here swinging the sword around. It got me inspired when we were doing Kill Bill here. So I was – you kind of – chose to use these words with Uma Thurman, but I had them in mind for this more like the experimental, like let's put her in this role, even though I haven't really seen her, you know, do her thing yet. But if Disney's got confidence in her, so do I.
What was her name again? How
L-I-U.
L-I-U.
Lou. Like Lucy Liu.
Lou.
Y-I-F-E-I.
Well, I will go with I don't know which one to go with. I'll go with Kelly Marie Tran because I've seen her in more stuff. You're crazy. I've seen her in more stuff.
She fights for the things she loves.
She does fight for the things she loves. She's willing to almost die.
I bet she does die. I bet she did die.
She
died of her injuries.
I was about to be like, I hope she did, but no.
Much more potent storytelling.
Quick, Last Jedi, like, you watch that, and you're like, that's probably the word. People were like, oh, there's so much bad stuff. This didn't need to happen. Like, think about that. She, quote-unquote, saved Finn by crashing into him head-on. She could have killed him. She could have killed both of them. His ship was disintegrating. He barely had any padding between him and everything else.
You're going on a Star Wars rant.
Kill Bill. Anyways, Kill Bill. Heads, we'll go with Kelly Marie Tran. Tails, is it Lou Yiffie?
We'll go that. We're from Pittsburgh East.
Tails, Lou Yiffie.
Lou Yiffie and that.
Alrighty. Bride to be, Uma Thurman's character. Who you got?
I'm between two. I had one that like all day. I was like, this is who I'm gonna pick as the bride.
How old was Uma Thurman when these films came out?
Fuck if I know, man. Let's find out.
I'm sure she wasn't. She's probably in her 30s.
Yeah,
if not late 30s.
I don't know if age really matters for this role. Let's see here. She's 49 now. 1970. Let's see, this came out in 2003. Math is good. 33.
Like this in the background.
She's 33.
33.
So, originally I had in mind Emma Stone. So, like, Uma Thurman, I mean, she's a big star, not necessarily an action star. That's not what I would have ever seen her as. So, that's what I was kind of going for in my mind. Like, I'm going to take someone who's not in that element and put them in that element. And she's a hardworking actress. Emma Stone is Oscar nominated, Oscar winning, rather. Hey, that La La Land action. Yeah. But she's great in Birdman. She's really great in everything.
She can be blonde. She can be redhead.
she seems like an adaptable actress in general.
Yes.
But just for the sake of homage,
you're going to cast Maya Hawke. You're going to cast Maya Hawke.
How about that thought, though? I mean, she's only 20 years old, so I don't know if it works. But Maya Hawke blew me away in Stranger Things. And it makes me want to see what else she can do or what she can do next.
She's great.
She's only been in, like, 8 things. And this is, like, Stranger Things is, like, her first big thing.
I want to see her go.
I know! She is going to be in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Does this mean Bill would be Ethan Hawke?
What? Ew. They're supposed to be lovers, damn it.
No. I don't like this.
Where did he come from?
It's in the book. I have a book, a little book that since our episode with Conan, which was our third movie, I've been keeping all our factories in this book, and I was flipping through the pages I have left, and I just found a note with just a little booger penis dude saying surprise, throwing confetti, and I didn't like it. Anyway, his continue.
My girlfriend draws all those little booger guys and hides them for me, as you can see from my little wall here.
I found this.
She hasn't been in much. She's going to be in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't know the extent of her character in that film. Stranger Things Season 3, her character blew me away. She was a welcomed addition to the show. And like I said, I can't wait to see what she does next. So I'm going to cast her in my movie, my Kill Bill.
Yeah.
And she is the daughter of Uma Thurman.
And Ethan Hawke. Yeah, to blow some of your minds. So I went with an actress who I haven't seen in much as of late because she's been rocking out that TV jam right now.
Whoa.
But I've loved her in every movie I've ever seen. Loved her in real life.
Garland.
She's been in things since she was a wee. I think she's handled all the roles I've seen her in well. I think she would handle an action role well, because I've seen her in shows where she did handle action roles, and that's Hayden Panettiere. Blonde. I love her in Heroes.
I love Beth Cooper.
Yeah, I love Beth Cooper. She's good in that. She's been in Nashville, which I don't know if you've ever, like, come across. I've come across a couple episodes of it. every now and again, and she it's more like a drama, soap opera-y kind of style, but she's really more so like dramatic acting in that. And she's not exactly, like you said, a person that you would anticipate to be this like vicious killer. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's good, and she is really good in Heroes.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, she's good in Remember the Titans.
Hey.
when she's like eight. But yeah, no, I thought Hayden Panettiere would be a good choice. I was like, blonde actresses that we haven't used. And
all of them.
Hayden Panettiere came to mind. I could have taken the easy route and been like Scarlett Johansson. Real yeah. quick, another rant. You know, Scarlett Johansson just got engaged to Colin Jost. The guy that Braun Strowman, this SNL guy, that Braun Strowman, that's who she's engaged to. She just got engaged to him.
Okay.
That's who, no, that doesn't, no.
Like, that's not me.
That's not fair.
He doesn't look like me when I'm imagined me with her.
I was like, Braun Strowman beat him up.
I could beat up Braun Strowman.
Yeah. Colin Jost. I saw that. I'm like, no.
She's supposed to be with Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. They didn't have time to flesh out that one, though.
That's right.
But yes, Hayden Panettiere was my choice. So
love everything she's in. Loved her in real life.
Yeah. So I will do heads, Hayden Panettiere. Tails, Maya Hawke. Tails, Maya Hawke. So I got the director of this film. But
sweet. Well, we only had three this week.
Yes,
so.
We did. So that was our Factory of Factory, Kill Bill Volume 1, Uma Thurman in the director's table, director's chair for the first time. Oren, played by Lu Yifei, and Maya Hawke as the bride.
Cool.
Sound good?
So I got a question for you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
If you were to put Jeff Goldblum, no.
In anything.
If you were to take a movie, any movie of your choice, live action, but randomly there is a scene that cuts to an anime sequence, what would it be?
That's how I would make a Dragon Ball Z movie. What if you made a live action Dragon Ball Z movie?
But every time it goes,
but
to
every
action.
Time it was an action sequence, it cut to anime. Yeah, that'd be great. Like they're when they go Super Saiyan, it goes anime. It's like can't handle this live action bullshit.
So you're saying you'd take Dragon Ball Evolution,
but make it anime,
and change the story and the character.
You can do that with any anime though, like My Hero Academia. You could do live action, then it just gets anime. It'd be weird. It'd be an experiment.
No, that's like, not, see, that's not one, my, that's not my question.
This one was different. Like Kill Bill did it. In a way that it was like the exhibition? Is that proper? It was backstory.
Exposition.
It was the backstory, though, so it worked. It was like a cutaway. So instead of doing like a flashback sequence, it did it. And I think there's other films out there that have done things like this or had different cuts like that where it's like animated or it's different like any Wes Anderson films. They do bullshit like that all the time where they cut to like animation or I'm trying to think of like the skiing scene in Grand Budapest, but film that's already made an anime scene. It'd be pretty badass in Rocky, like
whoa,
wouldn't it?
Fight.
Like, have you seen like some anime like boxing animes before? Yeah. Like yeah, like that would be pretty awesome.
All right.
Yeah,
or maybe like a training
Star
montage.
Wars the anime Star Wars would be great, like Battle of the Heroes, but anime.
So you definitely would like to go like some action scene of sorts.
I would like to see because I love anime and a lot of the animes that I do watch, shows that I watch are pretty action heavy. Mm-hmm. Minus Attack on Titan, which is action heavy but really story heavy, if anything. I still need to watch that last episode. Yeah, I think that would be good. I mean, you could do the backstory moments, but I just was thinking that would be what I would like to see.
Yeah. Cool.
You?
Lord
of the Rings, Return of the King.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be bad. Lord of the Rings, Battle of Helm's Deep.
Lord of the Rings, awesome. Just when Samwise Gamgee saves him, and that's it.
Oh, God. Don't you let go. which time when he saves Sam? When he saves Frodo.
When he saves Frodo from not being able to swim like a 2-year-old. Babies come out of the womb know how to swim.
They don't have hairy feet.
That's true.
And I don't mean to.
And just step on glass. That was Samwise.
That's true.
Didn't get eaten by a demigorgon.
I like the idea of a Rocky montage anime scene. Yeah. The training montage.
To be the best, you got to pass the test. Yeah.
How about
a live-action Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie, but when they lay the cards down, the cards are anime.
How about in Yu-Gi-Oh! The movie,
it goes live action. They're like, those eyes, those horrible blue eyes.
Shit. That'd be good. Or just for fun, like Back to the Future.
When he goes to the future?
No, the scene when it's like the 1950s and Biff and the gang are chasing him and he gets on the skateboard and...
Yeah. What if he went to the future and it was like a SpongeBob episode? He's like, "What?" It's like, "Why is everything chrome?" Barnacle grows and they spray it. Everything's chrome in the future.
My next question for you is, when do you think you'll watch Volume 2 of Kill Bill?
Whenever you finish it and lend it to me. Unless there's a digital copy, because I probably will watch it pretty soon. Until, I don't know, I'm going to get into Fire Emblem in 2 days.
We need to check. It might already be on there.
It's not.
You don't think so?
No, it's not one of the 166 movies we have on Vudu.
All right. Very well.
I flip through all those, like, consistently. I'm like, nothing's good on here. We have so many good movies.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, that is the show. Hope everyone enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard and you were checking us out on whatever you were listening to us on, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our primary source. That's where we post it, and then it kicks it out to all our other respective podcasting sites. So Audioboom, we upload it there. It has links to all our other Spotify, Google Play. You can find us on any ones, but that's our primary one. It also has links to all our other episodes, all our social medias, etc. So it's kind of like our hub. So be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. You can also find us on Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting clips from the show. We'll be posting memes that Gus makes. We'll be also posting ads and retweeting and liking other great podcasts. So be sure to check those out, and we'll let you know what we're going to be watching there as well. Sometimes we even post polls to help us figure out what we're going to watch or discuss for a week. You can also find us on Facebook.
Go to Facebook. You type in The Brothers Movie Factory. You'll find us there. Like us, share us, do your thing. Just follow along as I post links to everything Ben mentioned, as well as memes and just information about what we're watching each and every week.
Yes, indeedly do. But with that being said, until next week, brothers.
Ooh, brothers.
Sorry, I just showed you a picture of Hayden Bentier.
Distraction.
Brothers.
Brothers. Does he know that her child is still alive?
Don't tell Harry.